at center, and coming in is Lube. Hewitt-Dyke center net. McDonald scores! Matty McDonald!
And over at that Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
And he's stopped by Markstrom from point blank range.
You can put it in the win column!
Yeah!
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Okay, we are underway. It is Friday, March 15th, and this hour of Flames Talk is getting going from our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. Steinberg along with you on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. It is a Friday, which means it is time for the Eric Francis Hour, brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. The Alberta horse racing and breeding industry has an $83 million positive economic impact in Calgary annually. Visit thehorses.com. 18 plus. Please play responsibly. Steinberg and Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. For the next hour here on Flames Talk. Hello, EF. How are we doing?
Oh, I'm excellent. How are you, my man?
I'm doing very well. I enjoyed watching that comeback win for the Flames on Thursday night. I enjoyed watching Noah Hanifin's return to the Scotiabank Saddledome wearing number 15 as a member of the Vegas Golden Knights. How would you, if I were to say a smattering of boos, a kind of pedestrian amount of boos at the Dome on Thursday. Would you agree with that?
I think that would be extremely accurate. I would say that it was the applause following the video tribute was polite. I think it was nice. You know, like it wasn't an emotional. It's funny. Noah Hanifin's years here, 6 years, as you know, as solid a two-way defenseman as the team probably had over those 6 years. I mean, I guess Giordano was in there, and he was damn good. Won a Norris while he was here. But you know, Hanifin, I've said this on the broadcast a ton of times. I think that his time in Calgary will be remembered as being underappreciated. And, you know, I'm not saying he's going to go on to win Norris trophies or, you know, he may go on to win Stanley Cups. Who knows? But The guy is just entering his prime. Like, you know, we caught him in the formative years of his career. He was really, really good. But I don't think he was ever spectacular, right? He was just really good at both ends. So I use, like, beige, neutral words like polite and really good and, you know, solid. But you never use any sort of the superlatives with Noah Hanifin, right? And I'm not sure if that's fair because he was one of the most sought-after defensemen out there. He's a hell of a find for the Golden Knights. But yet, at the end of the day, I don't know. Do you think I'm way off base when I say that everyone's kind of mad about Noah Hanifin?
Yeah, and I that's probably fair. I mean, it wasn't like he wasn't a super sexy member of the team like Gaudreau or Tkachuk was. And he didn't really leave under the circumstances that a Gaudreau left under, where, you know, it was such a shock that he ended up getting, he ended up deciding to go to Columbus, and he ended up telling the Flames that he was going to free agency. You know, it was a little bit of a shock when Matthew Tkachuk decided to tell the Flames he wasn't going to re-sign, and then the trade with the Florida Panthers happened. Those ones were a little bit more of a shock to the system. We kind of been preparing ourselves for this since last summer, so I wonder if that plays into it too, where as much as the conversations about extending in Calgary went quite down the road a few times with Hanifin, everybody always knew there was a possibility that he was leaving, whereas I think with Johnny, as much as that possibility was always in the back of your mind, I think most people outside of this one guy who writes at Sportsnet.ca who kept on telling us that he won't sign. But I think there was a lot of people who thought that was you, by the way. Well done.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people thought that Johnny was still going to sign. And I don't know if people were expecting Matthew Tkachuk to, I don't want to say force his way out of here, but to kind of say, give him the heads up that this is not where I'm going to be long term. So I don't know. Hanifin was a little bit more, everybody was more prepared for it, I guess.
Yeah, and I think a better comparison is to Giordano, right? Like, it started becoming pretty obvious that it was inevitable that he wasn't going to be able to be protected for that expansion draft.
Yep.
And he was just like 2 years away from winning a Norris Trophy. that was probably more jolting, more upsetting for people, you know, something that really people agonized over, even though they knew that was coming too. But I think Jordan was, because he was the captain, he was here even longer. I think he was more front and center in terms of the media as the captain. I think he was more beloved. And anyway, I'll just go back to it. I think Noah Hanifin will be remembered as being very unappreciated here for a guy who probably should have got a whole lot more love from this city and the media and everything. I really believe that. But he's just a quiet guy, kind of a quiet player. And so because of that, it was kind of a quiet exit is probably the best way to look at it.
Kind of not. I mean, it was similar to Jay Bouwmeester's time in Calgary. I think that we look back, and I know I certainly look back at Jay Bo in Calgary and say, boy, did we underappreciate how good that guy was as a member of the Flames. Also a very quiet, unassuming guy. You know, Hanifin's a little bit more kind of that chill surfer vibe. Jay Bo was a little bit more of just like the hey, I'm not really interested in doing a lot of media. I'm kind of keyed to myself. even Dougie Hamilton. Now, Dougie got traded in a blockbuster trade, so that would be the only difference. But I don't know. I haven't think we look back at Dougie's time here and don't appreciate how good a player he was as a member of the Flames. Those are kind of the, and funny enough, Hanifin and Dougie were involved in the same deal. Those would be the three that I think of in recent memory that, you know, they get moved out and maybe we don't appreciate the type of player they were as a member of the Flames.
Yeah, yeah. And of all those guys you just named, I was the guy who people missed the most. Again, was Giordano, who at the time, correct me if I'm wrong, was he 38? At the time, you know, like people knew that he wasn't long for, you know, his days of dominance, but still they, you know, that loss was felt a little more by people. So yeah, it maybe just defensemen in general, unless you've got an absolute superstar like an Al MacInnis is probably the guy that I guess would top any list here in Calgary. Unless you lose a guy like that, people just don't, it doesn't hurt as much as a guy who's like a game breaker offensively, I guess.
So how you, and if you haven't read Eric's piece at sportsnet.ca, that came out, what, on Tuesday, I believe? Monday or Tuesday?
Monday.
Okay.
Monday.
Your chat with Noah Hanifin in advance of his return to Calgary came out. You got him at his hotel room where he's staying in Vegas, and you just talked to him about the trade, about how everything went down. I really encourage you to go read that piece with Noah and Eric at sportsnet.ca, because it did shed a little light on how it all came to the point where the Flames and Hanifin decided that a trade to Vegas or elsewhere was the way to go. And yet the thing that everybody's glommed onto and the quote that everybody remembers from the piece, and it's rightfully so, it's a strong quote, but his quote was, "I didn't hold the Flames hostage," which is kind of a headline quote of a piece that I think gives a lot of just a lot of context and a lot of clarity into why and how Hanifin's no longer a member of the Flames.
Yeah, and I think it's a really unfair narrative to suggest that, you know, he held them hostage in any way or that he, you know, hampered the Flames' ability to get the most for him. Yeah, for sure. The value that the Flames were going to get back for him was curtailed by the fact that he wasn't just going to sign an extension wherever the Calgary Flames traded him. And it's absolutely hypocritical and asinine for a fan to suggest that he should. Like, yeah, no, wherever you're traded to, you should sign an extension, spend the next 8 years there just so that the Flames maximize their contract. And I don't maximize the return on the trade. And I don't think actually anyone actually believes that that's what he should do. But for some reason, it was spun. And I know that the agent was working very hard behind the scenes, but he was doing it in my belief. And I've talked to both sides on this. Like, it's my, he was just letting every team know, hey, Noah Hanifin would come to your city for sure. If you wanted to trade for him, he will come to your city. But he is, there's only two or three teams that he's going to sign long term with. And so, obviously, if he's just a rental, teams aren't going to step up as much. Vegas didn't care about that. I had a good chat with Kelly McCrimmon, the general manager there last night, actually, about the situation he made. He said, hey, we never spoke contract extension with him before the trade. We thought he was worth it as a rental. but we're going to let the city of Vegas kind of speak for itself, sell itself. If he has a great experience here and we have a good long spring, maybe he would like to stay in our beautiful city, our tax-free, you know, haven with all the wonders of Nevada at his disposal. And maybe not. And that's okay either way, but we're going to give it our best shot. They're going to try to sign him. I think they've already had preliminary back and forth on what that might look like. But I think that if you're Noah Hanifin, you're going to wait till the summer. Like, why would you sign anything right now? Go and see how this experience plays out. It may be an awful experience. If they don't even make the playoffs or they lose in the first round, you're like, okay, well, look, my goal all along was to get – and that was something he made very clear in my piece. He wanted to go to the East Coast. He wanted to be closer to home. And I know we heard that from Johnny Gaudreau when he signed somewhere in Middle America. But this is a guy who wants to sign in the East. Everybody knows he wants to sign in Tampa. I think he would sign in Boston. But as he said, he goes, look, I wanted to go East. I wanted to go close to home. But then when you start to look at all the options, all the names, all the possible teams that I could go to, they start dropping off the board really quickly. A, they don't want me. B, they don't have room for me. C, they don't have the prospects to trade for me.
Yeah, don't have the assets.
D, they don't have the assets. So the list quickly whittles down to two or three teams. And again, that's not him sticking it to the Flames. That's just the reality of the situation. And he said, I was being honest with them. And I was saying, here's who I would sign with. These say eight teams. Turns out five of them are not interested or whatever, don't have the capacity to trade for me. So I guess it's only two or three teams. They could still go to the highest bidder who is a rental, and that's the Vegas Golden Knights. So anyway, it's not, I don't know if anybody really had their knickers in a knot on it, but I think people were just easy to say, oh, he's holding them hostage. It's just another player who's got a team bent over, you know, a barrel, and he really should do them better than that. I think he did them as good as he could have done them. Do you?
Yes. I mean, well, first of all, I never have a problem with either side going business first. And I do think Pat Brisson exerted a little bit more leverage than maybe Noah is letting on. But that's okay. Pat Brisson is the most powerful agent in hockey, and you employ him, and he takes X amount off the top of your paycheck for a reason, because he's the best in the business. And his job is to go out and work for his client. And nobody wields more influence in the representation business than Brisson does. And so he's able to kind of manicure and maneuver a little bit differently. And I do think there were a couple of wink, wink, nudge, nudge, like, hey, yeah, you could acquire him as a rental, but he doesn't really want to go to a rental. He'd like to go somewhere he's open to sign with. And when Pat Brisson gives you the wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you usually listen. And because you're dealing with another one of his clients down the road who's probably a pretty important player on your team. And so I think that that is the only thing that made it a little bit more difficult for the Flames. And yet, I think, and so, but do I begrudge Noah in the slightest? No, not even one bit, because when Noah signed his last contract, the Flames granted different general manager, but Brad Treliving exerted every piece of leverage he had on a restricted free agent and got Noah to sign a really, really team-friendly deal that gave them great value for every single minute he played on it. And so that's, teams exert all this leverage when they've got it, so why don't players get to leverage back the other way when they've got it? That's how I've always felt. So I kind of looked at it as Noah doing what is best for him and the Flames doing what was best for them. And what was best for the Flames was to get the best return for their asset, was to still work within the parameters of the Hanifin camp, even if they didn't give him exactly what he wanted, which we all believe was the trade to Tampa. And so I guess I kind of feel like there were a few teams he was open to signing with, and there was a little bit more of an open door that, yeah, maybe we could work something out. Vegas was one of those teams, no doubt. And that's where he ends up going. And so I think Craig Conroy and the Flames did a really good job with the obstacles that were in front of them. And I think the Hanifin camp did what they were fully entitled to do in terms of trying to get a client to a spot that is more amenable to his liking. I come away from the whole thing saying to myself,
hey, it's business, man, and I don't begrudge either side. And it'll happen again in another market because it is business. These guys still do have to look out for number one. So I didn't have any problem with Noah Hanifin departing Calgary the way that he did.
I think that's right. And it's well put by you. He's a guy who, you know, he's engaged to be married. He wants to start a family very soon, and he wants his young family to grow up close to his wife's family and his family. Nothing wrong with that. And I'll tell you what's really interesting about it is he said to me that on a couple of occasions they almost, like, he almost signed a contract. And I wonder, I mean, who knows what's going to happen moving forward, but I wonder how much the Flames may end up regretting the fact that they let those moments slip away. And I'm not, I honestly don't think that's a criticism. I'm just saying, you know, I talked to a guy, he's an upper management guy on one other team, and he said, guys like Noah Hanifin don't become available, period. They just don't. And it really is, it's fairly true. And so, you know, the Golden Knights, I think, took a very calculated risk reaching out and grabbing a bit of a unicorn on the open market. And they got him for a very reasonable price, considering what I think his upside is. So, anyway, it's we say goodbye to Noah Hanifin with a polite applause, and the Calgary Flames fans move on. Because again, here's the irony of, I just find this such a fortuitous spot for the Calgary Flames to be in. They've traded away three or four of their core pieces, three or four of the most popular players on the team in the last calendar year, and fans couldn't be more excited. Like, that is a rare moment in time where people are that willing to put a little pain in front of future gain, right? Because usually when you start trading away those core assets, those popular players, people start losing their mind, and there's fury and anger. I don't hear anger. I don't hear fury. People love Tanev. People love Hanifin. People love Elias Lindholm. I think every single fan right now is like, yeah, but
look what we got back.
Get rid of them.
Yeah,
look what we got back. We don't, and we might not even know the extent of what we got back quite yet, or for several years. But it's exciting to know that we do have stuff in, you know, in the coffers now. So,
well, and you know,
I think the Flames are lucky that that's the case.
You know, and part of that, I think, is I think that goes back to May and Craig Conroy kind of prepping the waters right from the get-go. I give Craig a ton of credit for how this whole thing has played out, starting from when he took the job. And because he said right from the get-go, we're not going to run into a situation where guys leave for nothing. We're going to try to sign the guys that we believe we're going to try to get these guys signed, the guys that we identify that we'd like to go forward with. But if we can't get them signed, we're moving them. No questions, point blank. And so everybody knew that this was, even if there was some skepticism that it would actually happen, everybody knew that the goal was to either be black or white. It was either they're signing or they're getting moved. And, you know, I think that helps in terms of the overall framing of the conversation. And then when you really factor in all of the work that Craig Conroy's done, it's worked out pretty well. So you start, obviously, the Sharon Govich trade with New Jersey and Toffoli. We know that was a big-time checkmark. The Zadorov trade, you know, I think Craig worked that pretty masterfully in a really awkward situation, got a good return for a guy who's, you know, barely on the third pair sometimes in Vancouver, despite being told that he was the team's best defenseman. Lindholm, we know they hit a home run on. And then there's the last two and the most recent, and those are the Tanev and Hanifin deals. And I think if you're a Flames fan, you can feel really good about the way these things transpired. So on the Tanev front, Chris, and you spoke with Chris after he was dealt. You know, Chris and Conroy had a conversation, and Chris relayed that, hey, I'd really like to go play for a Stanley Cup. And Craig Conroy said, you know what? You've been a good soldier for us, and I want to make sure that we're going to move you, but I'm going to move you to a place where that makes sense. And he did. And he got a nice return back from the Dallas Stars. Didn't have to take back a bad contract or anything like that. And so I think that goes a long way in terms of outside perception. And honestly, I do think there were some significant obstacles placed in front of the Flames in terms of this Hanifin trade. I do think the fact that it was not a coincidence that it was out there that he wanted to go to Tampa Bay. That was very strategically leaked by the Hanifin camp to try to get him to his number one spot. And when you've got that out there and there is a small, small number of teams that you're going to maximize value with, it makes it difficult on the GM. And now all of a sudden you're driving through this highway that's got a bunch of potholes and roadblocks and speed traps on it. And you're trying to navigate it as best as you can and still get the best return. And the fact that they went as deep as they did in trying to re-sign him and put the contracts that they put on the table to Noah and had that Tampa Bay thing hanging over them the entire time and still got a first-round pick with no conditions on it and got themselves a top 90 at-worst pick and a guy who's played nothing less than 19 minutes in Miramanov since he's gotten here. Like, I think you got to be pretty happy with the body of work that you've seen from the GM.
Yeah, and I think that part of the reason why people are, you know, excited to watch this rebuild happen is I think you've got a really popular general manager who people are really cheering for and have put a lot of faith in. Like, you know, people love Craig Conroy in this city. People are really rooting for him. And while I think at the beginning there were people who weren't sure if they would give him the benefit of the doubt, and I'm still not saying everybody's convinced that he's doing all the right things and making all the right moves, and everybody debates on this trade or that trade. Should he got more? Should he got less? But I think generally speaking, people feel like the team is in good hands with Craig Conroy at the helm, and he's a guy that they feel like they can get behind. And I'm not saying that they didn't think that about Treliving, because I think there was a lot of faith in that guy too. But Craig Conroy's popularity, I think, is a big key in the ability for the organization to do a complete shift in mentality and obviously take a few steps backwards here. And people are still really okay with it. I think if it was Treliving, I think it would be a little bit harder because people would be saying, yeah, you're undoing your mistakes. Now people look at it and go, okay, Craig's undoing past mistakes to try and right some wrongs and move forward. So yep. I think that's a key part of this.
Yeah.
And can I just add one thing? Like, Craig tried to sign all those guys.
For sure.
So I think that's important for people to know. Even Zadorov, like this organization wanted those guys back. They even wanted Toffoli, but not under the parameters that Toffoli was presenting.
Same with Zadorov. I mean, the conversations with Zadorov were pretty shut down pretty early because, like, hey, yeah, we'd like to sign back. Well, 6 years. Okay. That's yeah. We'll just maneuver here and see what we can do.
For sure. They moved quite quickly once they had the conversation started. But the intention, and I think all those cases, was, okay, like, we'd really like to have you back. You're a significant part of this team. All five guys that were traded in the last, 9 months or whatever, 10 months. But, you know, once you start talking brass tacks, like, you know, none of the numbers didn't make sense for Elias Lindholm. That's why the Flames weren't willing to bend anymore. And I think there's one where the Flames will look back down the road and say, we dodged a bullet there.
Yep.
In not signing Elias Lindholm. Good God, that the numbers we were hearing would have been just terrifying and would have just been just devastating to this organization. And that will be one of the most fascinating signings this summer, I think, for Flames fans to watch and see what sort of a discount he signs for. And then the other two guys, you know, I don't think it was really about the money so much, because Hanifin, they'd kind of come up with the amount of money he was looking for. It was just a matter of finding the right fit. And do they really want to stay? And at the end, they both decided they didn't want it. So they move on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's and the last thing that I'll say, like, when Craig spoke to us on Friday and when he sat down with us in the hot stove shortly afterwards, I know you were in sunny Florida, but
working.
I know you were. I know you were. That was a long day. But you can tell. So Connie didn't do any media after the Hanifin trade on the Wednesday, just because they still were in the war room getting back to work, and they were, you know, at that point less than 48 hours away from the deadline. So they were like, hey, Craig's got more work to do. He'll talk after the deadline on Friday. But he did do the 1 5-minute hit with Parks at Flames TV. And I was like, Craig looks like he hasn't slept in 95 hours. Oh, and
I agree.
You know, and when he said to us, he's like, he basically said, like, you have no idea how glad I am that this entire thing is now in the past. It was months and months and months of grinding and working to see how this could happen. It was negotiations with agents and seeing if you can get a contract. It was, damn, we're close on this guy. And then it falls apart. And it was all the continued outside noise and rumors and all, like, how many times did the narrative change on player X or player Y over the last 4 or 5 months? It was like, I don't think there's been a more labor intensive year one on the job for a first time general manager than what Craig just went through over the last 9 months or so since the Toffoli trade in June.
Yeah. I had a good long chat with him on the weekend, and it is pretty clear that, you know, while the rest of the world says, man, that's a busy month you've had, or a busy couple of weeks, he's like, couple of weeks, couple of months.
Yeah.
Like, since the day I took over this job, it has been nonstop. And I think that's part of becoming a first-time GM. It's like drinking out of a fire hose, no question about it. But this organization also had so many issues at the forefront that needed to be addressed one way or the other, and the whole hockey world knew it. And so I think that wore on him this whole year too. So he was a pretty relieved guy on Saturday when the trade deadline was over. And my first question was, like, how many hours sleep did you get last night? Like, my God, he did look pretty rugged. But anyway, I think at the end of the day, if you had to give him a report card, you'd have to give him at least a B for the work he's done over the last 10 months. I mean, he keeps getting accolades from people all over for the Toffoli trade. I still think the Zadorov return was a very good one. Mm-hmm. People forget that he was a third pairing defenseman. The Lindholm was a massive home run, like, by any stretch of the any way you look at it, that is a massive home run.
Especially after they signed Brustevich on Thursday.
Yeah. By the way, that was. You want to talk about Brustevich down a little later?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you had an article on him, and I had a funny conversation with him, but we'll talk about him in a bit. But these are again, that was a big day yesterday for that announcement to be made, and I'm glad that we both got to talk to this kid, because I think he clarified something that was a bit of a misnomer when it comes to him and his mindset moving forward.
Yeah. Well, let's do that as we continue on the Eric Francis Hour. Steinberg and Eric, excuse me.
Don't get choked up.
When I have to go to break and it means I'm going to be away from you for a few minutes, I get off the clip.
Yeah.
It is the Eric Francis Hour, brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. The Alberta horse racing and breeding industry has a $312 million positive economic impact in Alberta annually. Visit thehorses.com. 18 plus. Please play responsibly.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The Eric Francis Hour on Flames Talk. Steinberg and Eric from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. You know, when the Flames made the Elias Lindholm trade in late January, there was a lot of excitement. They got the two picks, including a first rounder. They got the, you know, interesting player reclamation project, if you will, in Andre Kuzmenko. But then they got the two prospects, and with no disrespect to the Finnish defenseman Joni Jurmo, when people, if they weren't big draft or prospects fans, when they went and looked up this Hunter Brustevich guy, you're like, holy, he plays what position and has how many points in the Ontario Hockey League? It's like, okay, they've got something here, and that Francis, that instantly turned into one of the top prospects in the Flames organization. He leads the OHL in assists. He's second in defense scoring. He's got 85 points in 62 OHL games with the Kitchener Rangers. But there was a very interesting narrative that immediately fell over. It's like, yeah, but is he going to sign with the Flames? You're like, well, what do you mean? He's like, well, okay, he was drafted in 2023, so in June of 2025, I guess theoretically he could walk away, not sign, and re-enter the draft, which happens every once in a while. That could happen. But then people in Vancouver were like, no, he was not going to sign in Vancouver. And so there was this, I think, little bit of worry that, well, does that mean he's an American guy not going to sign with the Flames? And, you know, all these American guys have walked away. So, like, is this going to happen again? What are they going to do with this prospect? Well, on Thursday, the Flames signed him to a three-year entry-level contract, $950,000 AAV. So any of that is alleviated. But honestly, Francis, it was I don't really think it was ever in question because, you know, as both you and I have talked to him in the last 24 hours and basically as soon as he was acquired, I think that it was indicated he was super eager to sign because he saw the opportunity here in Calgary, right? He saw that there was a chance to potentially be playing in the not so distant future.
Yeah. And it's, you know, he looked at the prospects ahead of him and he just thought, you know, in Vancouver, there are a lot of them ahead of him. Plus also, you know, ultimately he sees himself as the guy who's going to be running a power play. And as long as Quinn Hughes and Roenick were both in Vancouver, he didn't see like that being, you know, something that could come to fruition anytime soon. So he liked the situation here. Once he found out he got traded, you're right, he was like, I'll sign, no problem. He had to wait till March 1st just because of the league rules to sign the deal. I think you've alluded to this, Nate. That contract was probably signed 2 weeks ago and just in Connie's closet, Connie's drawer, because he forgot, with all the other stuff going on, he forgot.
Had a few other pressing things on his mind.
Yeah, but it was funny. I spoke to a guest today, and so he got a $950,000 contract if he plays in the NHL. He gets a $95,000 signing bonus. And I don't normally ask this anymore because – I don't know. I just, the big money world of sports, you know, I just don't ask it as much. But I said, any idea what you might do with some of that signing bonus? And he was like, he'd already thought about it. Remember, he's 19 years of age. He's like, well, I've been eyeing up a really sweet pair of shoes for a while, so I might go buy those, like runners. I'm like, oh my God, this is hilarious. He goes, or I might get a tattoo. And I said, like, what kind of tattoo? Like, you're going to get a Flames logo? That would be a dangerous thing to do in today's sports world. But he's got a sleeve that he's working on of tattoos all the way up his arm. There's a little bit of a gap there, and he wants to fill it in. And this $95,000 will help him do that just fine. So that's what a 19-year-old wants to do with a $95,000 signing bonus. Shoes or tats?
I endorse both. I thought it was hilarious when he said that I was, so we talked to him and I just asked him, like, what has the process been like since the trade was made and you know, the deal being official on Thursday? And he went right and he's like, well, let me tell you about when I heard about the trade. I was playing Xbox and watching Netflix at the same time and scrolling Twitter because I wanted to see if I was going to be a part of the trade. You're like, you were doing all those three things at the time, which again speaks to the difference of a 19-year-old, a 39-year-old, and the very young age that Eric Francis is.
It's thank you for not throwing any numbers around.
It was just like, oh, that's, I don't know. I'm a very good multitasker, but Netflix, Fortnite, and scrolling Twitter. I'm not sure if I could make all that work at the same time.
Yeah, that is a tough one. That'd be like me trying to do my taxes while writing a column and eating dinner at the same time. I can't do any of that stuff.
It is good that they got him signed. Alleviates any of the worry. And honestly, I don't think it was a shot at Vancouver when he said, I see more potential in Calgary than I do in Vancouver. It was more just very different life cycles of organizations. The Flames are just starting to pivot now. They've traded away in the last 4 months three regular defensemen.
in Zadorov, Hanifin, and Tanev, and only brought back one guy who is playing regular minutes in those deals in Miramanov. You know, they've claimed guys off waivers like Pahal and Hanley. But, I mean, if you're Brustevich, you look at it and say, you know, I'm a 20-year-old next year. I'm ready to play in the American League or eligible to play in the American League. But who's to say if I have a good camp that I couldn't push for NHL playing time? I don't know if it's the most likely outcome, but it's not completely out of the question either when you take a look at the circumstances in Calgary and his skill set, too. I mean, with Roenick and Hughes in Vancouver, they've got power play guys there. They've got guys that can profile as power play quarterbacks already, and they ain't going anywhere. You know, the path to being that in Calgary is a whole lot more direct. So I get it that he sees a whole lot more potential with the Flames than he did in Vancouver.
Absolutely, right? And it's all about competition too, right? Like Jeremy Poirier, they think ultimately he could be a guy who's going to run the power play, or you know, Rasmus Anderson's done it for the most part over the years, but this year, you know, the power play has been one of the worst in the NHL. So I'm not blaming Anderson, but just, you know, I think they're open to, you know, other possibilities, and they're just begging for Anderson to shoot the puck more. And you know, you look at Miramanov as being a guy who I think they see, they've given him instant, you know, number one power play duties just to see what he's got. And he helped run a power play in Vegas in the brief time he was there during injuries. So, you know, you want all these guys to be competing for that number one and number two power play job. And, you know, next year it'll be interesting to see which guys step up. You know, that's a pretty big jump for a guy who's 19 in the OHL to come and try to come and run a power play in the NHL. The other thing that I've heard, and tell me if you've heard anything different, but for Brustevich, a lot of the scouts, the guys who really watch these prospects say that he's kind of a third-pairing defenseman who will play the power play. Is that where I'm not trying to limit him or diminish who he is, because his numbers are incredible in the Ontario Hockey League, but is that what you're hearing from people too, that that's kind of how he projects as a third-pairing guy who can run a power play?
I think that definitely a few of the scouts have kind of pointed to him as that, although I've also seen people who believe he's got a higher ceiling than just being a 5-on-5 third pairing guy, that with, you know, if he really works on a couple of things with his skating, you know, maybe his raw speed might be able to be a little bit more than that. And one of the things that I know that he really appreciates about his own game and that I've read from and talked to a few people about is the way he thinks the game. There's a lot of appreciation for that. And when you think the game at a high level and you work on a couple of things technically, you know, that ends up being a really good attribute to have. So I think he is a guy with a higher ceiling than perhaps that, but you know, that seems like a pretty decent floor target. And if he can be a good power play guy, you're going to get lots of time in this league if you can run a power play. And that's something the Flames really haven't had as a consistent piece in quite some time. I mean, how over the last 5 years, Giordano, Hanifin, Anderson, Gustafson, Uyghur, they have looked for a blue liner to run a power play consistently, and they really haven't found that permanent fit. Well, maybe that's exactly what they've got in this player.
Yeah, I think it's early to say, but that's what they're hoping. And so, yeah, good that they got him signed. It was funny when we were talking about him on the TV broadcast a couple weeks ago, Ryan Leslie described him as Adam Fox Light. And I said, oh, well, that's an interesting choice of words. And now we know that he signed. And he won't be an Adam Fox. Like, he'll be he'll be a Calgary Flame no matter what. So that's good.
Yeah, and now maybe the skill set can be talked about like that, not the way things go early on in his career. As we wrap things up on the Eric Francis Hour, it's Steinberg and Francis along with you. Just when we were talking on the phone, kind of just plotting the show out, one of the things that you said that I think is really important is just, you know, the playoff push is what it is. It's kind of whatever. They are where they are. Could they put together a miracle run?
Yeah, sure. But, you know, that's not why that win over Vegas on Thursday was important. But that doesn't mean it wasn't important. They needed a showing like that after the last three games. That was a really important game for the group and a really important game on the outside as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, and for Dustin Wolf. Like, it was important
absolutely.
For so many reasons, Pat. Like, that, they'll look back at this season and they may say that was one of the more pivotal games, which sounds crazy because, like, you know, they're all but out of a playoff race. They just lost three in a row. But I think that there were a lot of people that were worried that this team was just going to fade into oblivion. Now that the changes had been made, morale was low, and here we go for the last 16, 17 games. They're just going to mail it in. And I tell you what, they showed us the character that I've been crowing about all year long. Whether this team's got enough skill, whether they're deep enough, whether question all you want about the makeup of the team and how it's, you know, it's been depleting. For obvious reasons. I think the one thing that's really emerged this year is a character that I don't think can be questioned. Last night's game, they had six rookies. That's one-third of your skaters were rookies. Eight of the players in that game last night have played less than 65 games in the National Hockey League against the defending Stanley Cup champions. And when one of your rookies is a goalie who's coming off, you know, he was lit up in his previous two starts. Like, there was a lot on the line last night. And with that character, and we're going to show the world that we're better than we have been the last three games. I think that's for the team. I think for management. I think for Dustin Wolf. And I think largely for the fans to see that, no, this team's not done. This team's so much better than they showed those three games. And I think we understand over the course of this year, that was an anomaly. And they played three powerhouses. They were in a midst of what, four games and six nights.
Yep.
You know, these games were on the road. There was a lot that went into this, but at the end of the day, they got out of it. Now, where they go from here, who knows? But the point is, people are going to want to tune in to see where they go from here. Whereas you have another loss like that, four in a row, I'm not sure people are still going to stay engaged right to the end. So I just think it was important to kind of remind people, We got a lot of pride in this room. We got a lot of character, and we got a whole lot more talent than anyone's willing to give us credit for. And I think they showed all that last night. And I think it was just one of the more important wins that you've seen at the Dome in a while.
It's it is fun watching Coleman and Sharon Govich go shot for shot. Like, hold on, you know, I need 28 as well. And these two guys last hour on the round table, I just kind of asked, like, if you were preseason, if you were doing up power rankings of players that were going to lead the team in goals this season, where would Coleman and Sharon Govich have landed? And I mean, for you, Sharon Govich, the way that Sharon Govich was popping for you early on, I don't even think he would have been on your radar.
Oh, my God, no. No, I mean, you knew you felt like if you could put him with the right people, that shot was going to get him maybe, you know, 15 goals. I don't know. You never knew what the possibilities were, but yes, 10, 15 games in, I didn't think this was at all possible. I saw a meek player, a timid player who wasn't really interested in engaging the way I think this team needs players to do. And I think he figured that out. And I think he is a real good, solid two-way player now who wins wall battles, who's not scared, he's not meek. And he's got a hell of a finish to his game. Like, boy, oh boy, what? And that said, I don't know. You could have an argument all day long over which one is the more surprising one of the two. Listen, I thought from the day that they got Coleman that he could be a 25-goal scorer. I always thought that. Because he got, 23, I think, one year in New Jersey. And he wasn't even given first-line minutes, and he was getting 23 goals there. And even in Tampa, he was, you know, pretty much a 20-goal scorer on pace most years, but he was playing third-line minutes.
Yeah.
I thought if you gave him first or second-line minutes, maybe he could be a 25-goal scorer, maybe tops 30. But he's playing third-line duties, and he's going to get 30, 33, 35 goals this year. That's incredible. I mean, another debate we could have on another day, because I know we got to go. Like, what's more incredible? Blake Coleman getting, you know, let's just say for a round number, he gets 35 this year. Blake Coleman getting 35 goals on the third line, or Andrew Mangiapane a couple of years getting 35 goals on a third line without playing a single minute on the top power play unit, not playing a single minute on the top line. I mean, these are incredible seasons for guys given where they slot in the lineup. It's absolutely incredible. But what's the common denominator between those two guys?
The captain.
Michael Backlund. Yeah. Michael Backlund. And, I, you know, if one thing people talk about at the end of this year, it's, you know, of all the things the Calgary Flames did and Craig Conroy did, making Backlund the captain was one of the most important things, because as this team went through its peaks and valleys this year, they talked endlessly about how the leadership of this team is what steadied the course through all these wild ups and downs. And it's the reason why they're still on the fringes of a playoff race, the leadership group. And that leadership group was there last year, but not the way it is this year, because now he's captain and there's no questioning who the guy is they got to look to.
Yep. Yeah, and in the end, to wrap up and bring it full circle, Craig Conroy said it's black or white. You're either re-signing or we're trading you. And there were six guys, because Oliver Shillington was in a different space, yeah, and wasn't really part of the conversation for the reasons we understand.
Yeah.
One guy signed. He's the captain. The other five didn't. They were all traded. And he said it was black or white, and it ends up being one way or the other. That's, you know, it's not always easy in a professional sports world that lives in gray to be able to stick to a definitive plan like that. Whether you like the returns, love the returns, or so-so on the returns, whatever. The fact that he said it was going to be one way or the other, and that's exactly the way it played out, it's pretty impressive when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And it doesn't mean that he's hellbound to stick with that. Next year, the year after, whenever it is that they're challenging for a playoff spot again, there could be a potential UFA who you do keep
past
the deadline because you need him for a playoff run. No one's holding him to that. But for the next little while, it's pretty good credo to have.
Yep. Good stuff, my friend. As always, we'll do it again next week, and we'll see you Saturday for a fun game between the Flames and Habs, hey?
I appreciate it. Yeah, it'll be fun tomorrow night, the old original six, and make sure people read Pat's mailbag on sportsnet.ca. It's a gooder.
What a guy. Bye, Francis.
See you, buddy.
Eric Francis. The Eric Francis Hour wraps up. Eric's on Twitter, at Eric Francis, and you can catch him on Sportsnet Telecast, sportsnet.ca, and more. And the Eric Francis Hour is brought to you, as always, by Horse Racing Alberta. The Alberta horse racing and breeding industry has an $83 million positive economic impact in Calgary annually. Visit thehorses.com. 18+. Please play responsibly.